It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I thought it was allergies for the last few days. Allergies have been killing me, and maybe it still is, but today it's bad enough I'm canceling plans and stuff. I might be actually sick. I don't know.
Oh, but that's too bad.
Everything under the skin and from the neck up is just snot.
Mm.
Just solid, like a bowling ball full of snot.
That's too bad. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, super happy about it. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about.
Oh.
So, you know the idea of you had to be there kind of moments?
Yes.
I am really susceptible to those. In a weird, like, just little things, like, crack me up that nobody else does. I remember, I think I've talked before about the summer I watched Princess Bride every day, all summer long, at least once a day. There were certain lines that I would like pause and back up, and they're not like the famous lines. Like it's Andre the Giant saying, "Will this do?" when they ask for like a Holocaust cloak or whatever. And it's just that line, and it just cracked me up to play it over and over. I don't know what it is, but I had one just the other day. I'm watching my OX people, the video game people from Britain. And I forget what they were talking about, but it was something involving a military game, and the code name of one of the people was Lion. And one of the hosts was like, "Oh, I guess they were lying about that game." And the other one's like, And then she says, "Well, I have my pride. I still have my pride." It's like, "Oh." And then she says, "Now ask me why I have a lion in my wardrobe." And he sighed and was like, "Why do you have?" And before he could even finish, she said, with what I'm going to say is the excitement of a toddler that just learned what jokes are, she says, "None of your business." And I have watched this little section of like 10 seconds easily half a dozen times. I told Trish about it. I made Trish watch it. She doesn't think it's that funny. And I keep watching. It may be tied to the people. The person in question doesn't normally act like that. I don't know. But I get these a lot where I'm just like, this one thing is really funny to me and not to anyone else. And sometimes it's you had to be there, but sometimes it's like even if you were there, it doesn't matter. And I can watch it over and over. I don't know what's wrong with me. But it's just a thing I have. So I do like that line, though. Ask me why there's a line in my wardrobe. None of your business! All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that will survive to rise from the ashes after the Dark One has claimed us all and destroyed the mankind and brought about a new age of fire and pain. We're going to be the only podcast, so that should be good.
I mean, we have all the fire and pain you could ever want.
There you go. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 652. Three. This is episode 653. The last one was 652. I know that because I'm looking right at the number. That's why I said it wrong.
This is not a two-parter, people. Although, again, this is not on Thursday. It's on Wednesday. And actually, like 10 minutes ago, because of the things I had to cancel today, we're not going to be able to record at the regular time next week, but we can talk about that later. We were supposed to record yesterday, and Zoom lost its goddamn mind. Mm. And so we couldn't. So, and we can't Thursday. I had plans, and I was like, well, fuck it. I'll just cancel them and we'll move it. But then you reminded me that you had plans that are not very cancelable.
No.
So we're shooting for today, although it's less tight than it was because I canceled the rest of my afternoon plans. So we're fine. If you're just joining us, welcome. I'm not normally this low energy. we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. You should write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever whatever you'd like. I'll give you an example here. Dear Magical Talking Hat, what's your favorite fruit? You could email that. Or, don't you think white men have enough of a platform already that you feel the need to do a podcast? These are all, they don't have to be questions either. But here, things you figured out. The hat magically forwards to us the emails. We read them, talk about them. That's it. When did we last record? Because we didn't record normal last week either, did we?
Yeah, we did last week.
Oh, did we last week?
There was a 2-week gap before that. Yeah.
All right. So it has been almost a week. How has your week been?
Good. So we watched the Hill House, Mike Flanagan's Hill House series again. Mm-hmm. This will be the third. So this is the sixth kind of fall season when the show was around. And this is the third time we've watched it. And we like it every single time. And maybe
I've thought about rewatching that one, not Bly Manor, but that one.
Yeah, maybe we'll like, I don't know, maybe it'll become a thing we do every year. I don't know. But it hasn't so far been, but we like watching it. And we decided, well, let's try Bly Manor again to see if maybe, you know, if we can set aside whatever expectations made us maybe respond to it not entirely positively the first time. But it still didn't quite hit the mark. The way I see it is it's kind of it's actually not bad a psychological thriller. It's just not a very good supernatural thriller, which is what it's supposed to be. Yeah. So
that's in general, I think Bly Manor just isn't really sure what it wants to, like Hill House had a direction.
Oh my gosh. So well planned out and executed. Yeah.
And not that it's part of this series, but Midnight Mass also like knew what it was doing up front. Bly Manor seemed to sort of drift.
Well, we're watching
drift out of horror sometimes, which is the whole point.
Right. We're watching Midnight Mass again and like it just like the other two times we've already seen that one. I don't know. So we don't like everything Mike Flanagan has ever done, right? Like Oculus, that's a film we saw. It was okay.
Was he Oculus?
Yeah, I guess that was his.
I only just saw it like a year or two ago. Yeah, that was disappointing.
Yeah,
it was a really neat idea that was not great.
So, you know, when we look at his body of work, the things we've seen and some things that we're not even interested in seeing, it's pretty much just this TV stuff that we find compelling and not all of it. We did watch The Midnight Club when that was first out and it was okay, but I don't remember it really blowing us away either. So
I still waffle on that. I might watch that, but I'm not sure.
We're kind of hoping that this next thing he comes out with will be really good.
I'm just worried because the whole premise with the Hill House and Bly Manor and all that is it's based on it's about a haunted house. The trailers for the Usher one do not look like that.
No.
I if there is a haunted house, I cannot pinpoint which house it was in
that
trailer.
Well, of course,
if you haven't checked it out, though, you should watch Ouija Origin of Evil.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Yes, and you can watch it without watching the original, and that might be advisable because the original kind of sucks. But the prequel, which is his, stands alone fine, and is pretty good.
So, yeah, we've been watching that stuff. But, I mean, otherwise, not a lot going on. How was your week?
Not going on here either. I don't even think I wrote anything down in the thing. I'm blowing through TV shows. By the way, Jazz, I finally looked up Station 11, and I think you made the right call. And I definitely made the right call. And I looked up the book it's based on, and the book is actually darker and more fucked up. So, but yeah, we're trying TV shows. Because we finished all the stuff we were watching. I tried to do, there's a show on Max called Poor Devil, and it's an animated Spanish show about the Antichrist, and the Antichrist is actually like a sweet doe-eyed little kid who doesn't want to destroy humanity, and you know, hijinks ensue. We watched two episodes and I've already bailed. It has strong Rick and Morty vibes, except it's dumber. So I got out real fast. And then there's another one that we are still watching that started rough, but we're keeping to it. We are watching Green Glove Gang on Netflix. It is a Polish series. It's hard to explain because the first episode was kind of confusing. It's starting to settle in. It's about three older ladies who rob somebody, and then because of reasons, there's worry they might get caught, and so they hide out in this nursing home, and then hijinks ensue. And some of it is the mystery, and like we've got the police on it and all these things, and there's all sorts of side stories, but some of it is very much the sort of classic trope of these three wild ladies are going to show up to this sad, pathetic nursing home and make them realize the joy of life. It's got that kind of vibe going. Second episode was way more fun. So, and they're short. They're half-hour episodes, only eight of them. And apparently it is getting a second season. So it's in Polish. You got to read the subtitles. But
do you think Netflix is creating is driving the culture to take in, you know, like you're talking about, well, I'm watching this Polish thing, I'm watching this. I mean, Netflix is where you go for that, really, as far as I can tell. I mean, you want to see foreign, good foreign content that's promoted, right? That's like, you find it, you don't have to go looking for it really. And you watch it and you like it. Is Netflix propelling a lot of, people broadening their cultural perspectives by watching things that other people are making, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, I don't think that's why they're doing it. I think because it's cheap to grab the Turkish superhero TV
right. I'm just asking if that's just happening by accident.
90% of Netflix now is just foreign language television. I hope it is, although they're not the only ones to do that. Max, I've seen a few things on Max that are also subtitled, and things. I mean, everybody has some of those, but Max has had a few that I've watched. There was a horror one from Spain, and there's an Asian dark fantasy one called Half Worlds that I've been meaning to watch. But there's a few in there. Actually, this animated one that was Spanish language, we started it and it was English. And we were confused because the trailer had been in Spanish. And so I stopped it. I set the thing to Spanish and started it again. And everything kind of glitched out. And when it came back, it was still in English. So I switched it again, sent it back, and everything kind of glitched out. Then it was working in Spanish. And 2 minutes later, I was like, I'm sorry. It was too fast. They talk too fast. So then I had to switch it to English. And to be fair, they put some effort into the English voice cast, and that was good. But again, I don't recommend the show, so I don't know what I'm talking about. Also saw a movie last night I don't recommend, which is too bad, because I thought you would love it, based on the premise.
Oh.
It's called Ghost Story, which is confusing because I believe there are about 57 movies called Ghost Story. This one is from 1981, and it is based on a Peter Straub book of the same name. And it has a hell of a cast in it. Fred Astaire, John Houseman, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Patricia Neal, Alice Krieg, Don Watson, or Wasson, a bunch of old names. It's from 1981. And yes, it's acted fine. First of all, you figure out what's going on real. Like, the big mystery is like, oh, what happened? All these old men are hiding a secret. Yeah, it's real. Well, I'll put it to you this way. One of the earliest clues we find is a very old picture of these four old men being looking very young, posing with a young woman who we've never seen or heard from. Gee, I wonder what the secret's gonna be. The mystery wasn't really there. But also, it's just one of those where, like, everyone involved says and does things to move the plot forward that are out of nowhere. Like, we had a scene where Fred Astaire went to this old abandoned house and there were people there. And, like, we had a scene that, like, talked about stuff in it for the plot. There was no reason for him to go to that house. We didn't discuss why he went. And various things where somebody's like, I think this person's a ghost. And I'm like, I think you're right, because I'm watching the movie. But nothing that has happened to you should make you think they're a ghost. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mess. But it's kind of a fun time. There's a lot of good acting in it. And there's some cool effects. But yeah, I thought you'd be into it. But it's not very good, so you might not be. Have you seen the trailers for Dream Scenario?
Mm-mm.
You should look this up. It's coming, I think, this fall. It's an A24 movie with Nicolas Cage, where he plays a boring middle-aged college professor. And the premise of the movie is everyone everywhere is dreaming about him. He shows up in their dreams. This just starts happening. And eventually people, like, put it together that's him, and he sort of becomes famous for being in everybody's dreams, and then it gets weird. So it looks very crazy and funny in a way that only Nicolas Cage can do. You know what I learned?
What's that?
I learned two things recently. Are you familiar with the movie Saturday Night Fever? I don't mean have you seen it. Are you familiar with it?
I'm aware of it, yes.
Yes, John Travolta's breakout hit. He's a disco-obsessed dude. I've seen it, and that's all I can remember. Plot. It heavily features the song Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. What I didn't realize is it was written for that movie. That was weird. But then the other thing, so they did a sequel called Staying Alive, also starring Travolta, that's basically him trying to become a professional dancer, I think.
Mm.
And it's apparently really bad. But the end of it, spoilers, I guess, he gets the role or whatever, and he's very excited, and he kisses a girlfriend, but he says there's one thing he's got to do to truly celebrate this, and that's strut. And then he walks outside, and he basically walks down, I assume, Broadway, just strutting his heart out, and while Staying Alive is playing in the background. This exact thing, word for word, including the Bee Gees song, happened in an early episode of The Simpsons. And I always knew it was like referencing a style or whatever. I didn't know it was literally copying a specific scene. So that was, yeah, it's the old one where Bart ends up falling in love with the minister's daughter, and she's voiced by Meryl Streep and she's bad or whatever. But there's a point where he is trying to get her attention, doesn't work, and then he finally does, and he's very proud of himself. And it's like, there's only one thing to do, and that's strut. And he like opens the collar, right, and he walks down the street. Go ahead.
Well, not long ago, somehow we discovered, you know how you're going from video to video on YouTube and you discover this whole cache of similarly themed things.
Oh yes.
This vein that we hit was black people watching the Staying Alive video with the Bee Gees and being shocked that they're white guys. What they would typically say is just about every black movie they'd ever watched growing up had this song in it. And, you know, they just assumed that these were black guys. Oh, that was interesting.
I'm full of those. And I'm not alone, but very sort of famous. Rick Astley is a big one. In fact, Ted Lasso references, somebody in Ted Lasso figures out Rick Astley's white. The one that I don't know why, because it's not like I was a fan. I was very young when he was a big thing. But the one that like just sticks with me to this day is Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
Like, that dude sounds fucking black.
Lots of people think so, yeah.
And he looks like me, like I look now, or at least he did back in the day. It's just very weird. There's that shitty movie that Key and Peele made that I love them to death, but that movie was not good. Has a whole thing where Keegan-Michael Key's character gets a bunch of thugs into George Michael. And there's a point eventually where he has to confess to them that he's actually white. I just remembered something else I saw. I don't know why I didn't write it down. We've been doing a lot of, I've never seen this classic movie. We should watch it. Or I haven't seen it since you. In fact, just recent when we were watching the thing, the Ghost Story movie, Trish is like, you know what I haven't seen? She's like, we should watch On Golden Pond. And I'm like, we should, because we both saw it when we were very young. And now we're like, that's an insane cast. Like, what is that? How is that even a thing? So, like, yeah, I mean, we'll check that out. But anyway, we had one of these. I hadn't ever seen it. Trish had not seen it in many years. So we watched Death Becomes Her.
Mm.
You ever seen it?
Mm-hmm. I might have seen it in the theater.
It's one of those that my friends in high school and in college are like, it's one of those things that amongst my social circles, people talk about it a lot and how good a movie it is and stuff, but I've never seen it.
Hmm.
And so I watched it and I mean, it fucking holds up for starters.
Hmm.
Like it is impressive, and there is a huge swath of misogyny in it, as there were in 80s and 90s movies. Outside of that, I don't find it that problematic, which is shocking. There's not a lot of racial shit, there's not weird homophobic shit, none of that is there. But what's really amazing, it's 1992, 94, something like that. The effects hold up really well. And I am shocked. Meryl Streep's head turned around completely backwards. Goldie Hawn with a big hole in her tummy. Like, they all still work. I don't know how they did the effects, but it's really good. But it's also Meryl Streep, Goldie Hawn, and Bruce Willis all still on the upswing of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird time to be seeing the three of them, and it's really interesting. And it's a very different role for Bruce Willis than what we're all used to That's pretty funny. Oh, and Isabella Rossellini looking absolutely gorgeous, walking around in a sarong and some jewels, and that's it. And looked her up. She's like 3 years younger than Meryl Streep, and that's it. She looks so young. And weirdly, the oldest one is Goldie Hawn, which is confusing because Goldie Hawn has looked like a 9-year-old since she was born and never changed. But she's apparently the oldest of them there. But they're all pretty young. It's pretty fun. So that was a good time. What else am I doing? I don't even know.
Do you find yourself wondering about things while you're watching films and television that you wouldn't even have bothered wondering about before because there was no way for you to just grab your phone and look it up? And now you sort of entertain that. Well, for example, well, you know, how old are all these people? Or where are all these people born? Or, you know, just all kinds of things you can wonder about and look up on your phone that you wouldn't even probably have thought about before because you didn't have this immediate way to find it out, which means this information is relevant to you in context now in a way that it just wasn't before relevant at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad or just it's just what it is.
I mean, I like it because I do it all the time. I am constantly doing the where do we know them from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
And Trish tends to do the other ones. Like, is this based on something? And so then she'll look that one up.
That, but I am often curious where someone came from, how they're, you know, what their background is, if I can find that out. I mean, not that I was never interested in that before, but it's like if that thought came up in my head, 20 or 30 years ago, it would immediately get pushed aside for something more productive because I wasn't going to know that. I wasn't going to be able to find that out.
There is
right now.
There's an old comic called Chuck and Beans. That's just two anthropomorphized animals that like hang out together. I think it went on to be a greeting card series. So there's a bunch of them there. But there is one that I love to death. And I used to have it up at work. And it still sticks to me. And it's just a single panel. And it says, life before Google. And they're sitting on the couch. And one says, I just thought of a topic I'd like to know more about. And the other one says, that's a damn shame. And I don't remember what we did. I do kind of. I think whoever said it the loudest just won back in the day. But like we recently had this, my sister, when I was home in April, my sister, we were talking about the Fast and Furious movies, which I've never seen, but I saw the series recap, so I know way too much about them. And I was talking about how Paul Walker died. And they didn't kill his character. He's always retired. And in fact, in the ninth one, I think his car pulls up at the very end. They just don't kill him off. And it's very weird because there's a lot of scenes where the actors are very clearly emotional in a way that doesn't make sense if he's just not here right now. And I said this to my sister, and she's like, no, they killed him off. And she saw all the movies until he died. And my sister has this thing sometimes where she's just like, definite. She's like, it's definite. She's like, no. And I was like, I don't think. And so finally I looked it up on Wikipedia so that we could prove the point. And I was like, no, see, look, here's the thing. And like in the past, I think one of us would have just browbeat the other down and been like, okay, that's. To say nothing of common wisdom that's all debunked nowadays. That just came up the other day. So do you remember the idea that 30 to 40% of your body heat leaves through your head? That's a thing. My mom told me that. A lot of people believe that. You lose more body heat out your head, so you got to wear a hat when it's cold. Nope. Absolute bullshit. It is absolutely the percentage of surface area and nothing else. So, but weird things like that are all over the place in it. It's scary, powerful stuff, and it also creates for weird obsessive fan culture.
Well, I mean, there was always that, but you yeah, had
but
to
it's more intense now because you feel like you know them because you can look up everything about them. Oh, I'm still
you
amazed.
Can also talk to them, right? You can also right? post things to their Twitter and stuff.
Kind of amazed. So the outside Xbox people that I watch a lot, I wanted to look up more about them, and the internet cannot make up their mind about whether or not two of them are married. And it's either they are married or she married a dude who just looks an awful lot like him. But what amazes me, because this never happens anymore, the internet doesn't have a consensus on this. I think I have read enough things now that I think they're not married, although they're very close and they've worked together for many years, and they clearly are friends and hang out, but like I just find it fascinating that I went to the internet and the internet could not answer, because that doesn't happen.
I wonder what would happen if you asked one of those artificial intelligent things, just are these two people married, what the thing would say.
Do you remember, because they were still around when we were working together, the various proto AI that people would put out as just browser games?
Oh yeah.
When I was in college, there was one, and I believe the whole bit was you would ask a question and it had a bunch of characters that were just silly pictures. And one of the, like, they would see which one would answer for you. I don't understand what the AI was doing, but it was like you'd ask a question and different ones would pop up. And eventually we figured out patterns, like so and so only shows up. And it was things like, this is Yoda, or this is Deep Blue, the computer. There was one that was the crack baby meme, things like that. And we would learn that like certain ones would seldom show up and other ones would show up almost all the time and things like that. But you got to see, you could see the questions people had asked.
Mm.
This was a problem because, as I said, my group of friends, my circle of friends in college got way into this. And at a certain point, we were doing it all different times a day. And at a certain point, some of us got on there and saw that one of the questions listed was like, does Josh have a crush on it was something very specific that let us all know that a certain one of our friends had a crush on another one of our friends, and now we all knew it, and it was just weird. So you gotta watch out for that stuff. Oh man, how long have we been podcasting? I don't know. All right, do the email. I think we only have one, but we don't have anything interesting to talk about. So do it.
Jazz wants to know.
Jazz always wants to know.
What are some of the costumes you've worn for Halloween or for cosplay that are some of your favorites and why? Also, how do you think costumes are related to your sense of identity, if at all? How does this differ from everyday dress, if at all? Jazz, who would like to wear costumes all the time?
Well, Scrawny Claws, you want to build this one to start?
Are you a costume person? I mean, have you?
I am a costume enthusiast.
I don't think I've ever seen you in any kind of costume.
Unfortunately, I'm built like this. So, and this is a self-image thing. Like, would I love to dress up as Geralt of Rivia? Yeah. Would I look in the mirror and say, oh, that's like a fat, balding Geralt of Rivia? I don't like that. Like, we all know, like, that's the beauty of cosplay, is anybody can do it. But if you've got body issues, and most of us do, you're like, yeah, that doesn't look like the character. That looks like me in a dumbass thing. So I would try and do, I've never been particularly satisfied with my costumes. Growing up for Halloween, I was always a clown. It was not my idea. For like the first 3 or 4 years of my life, I had the same clown outfit that was probably a hand-me-down or whatever. when I was old enough to choose my own costumes, the one I remember in particular is I went as Superman many times because I had a Superman t-shirt. And at the time, for some reason, the underwear my mother was buying me came in colors, and there were one that was red. Now, it was a dull red and very clearly underwear, but I was a kid, so I wore jeans and that t-shirt, and I would put the red underwear on the outside and then some sort of cape. I don't remember. It was probably a towel or something. And I would do Superman, and I did that a couple years. I also remember a year I was so excited I got a store-bought costume. It was a Gremlin costume, which consisted of a plastic tunic that was like yellow with a picture of a gremlin on it, and then a very cheap plastic gremlin face mask. But no, I mean, not a lot. One year I dressed up as my character from a vampire game. And yeah, I haven't, I like that kind of stuff. I look at cosplay videos and stuff. I think it's very cool. I sometimes think about what cosplay I could get away with, and it's mostly down now to Kingpin and Ursula from Little Mermaid. And I'm way more interested in the second one, but both of them involve somebody would have to make me a costume. I have not found that, but yeah, I don't got a lot. What about you? I asked you to answer it. Instead, you just turned it back on me, you jackass. And I know you do costumes. You're a punk.
So I have been interested in costumes ever since I was as long as I can remember. Interested in, like, hats in particular. To me, it was great that one item that you put on your head could be your whole costume, right? If you wore it right, I guess. And but I certainly was interested in the costume being more than just a hat. But it was cool to me that you could just have a hat, and that would be fun. And what I liked about costumes was the theatrical element, right? Just, it wasn't so much about a personal identity, like, oh, this says something about me. It was, oh, look, I can act out a story that, you know, is congruent with this costume or character or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember very early in life, I mean, one of the first costumes I ever had that I really liked was a ghost costume, because I liked ghost stories. I thought they were fun. But I didn't like the costume as a whole, because back then costumes did what you were talking about. There was a tunic with a character on it, and then you might be wearing, that wasn't a costume. It's like a real ghost doesn't have a picture of a ghost on its chest. And I hated that. It's like, don't do that. See?
And I was super excited as a kid. And then years later, I was like, what was wrong with me? I think I just really liked the mask, maybe. I don't know. Or for me, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people, but not you, because you're William. But if you were in a certain sort of economic bracket, or just in a certain situation in terms of what your parents spent on you, the idea that this one was a store-bought one was, like, exciting to me. Because all my other costumes had been homemade and, you know, looked good. But, like, this was, because that's the thing. When you're a kid, you're like, oh, like, my mom made me homemade food that she spent all day cooking, and it's amazing, and people would kill for this. Oh, that kid got Lunchables? God damn, I wish I had Lunchables. Like, well, that kind of thing.
Okay, so I liked costumes in a way where I preferred what mom made. Not just because they were better, but they were better. I mean, so... I think mom sensed that out of all the kids, I was more excited about these things than they were. So I think she really liked making costumes for me because she could see I really appreciated it. And so in Melcher,
not in Dallas,
they had for homecoming. Was it homecoming? I think it was homecoming. Well, they had parades all the time for Coal Miners Day, homecoming, or whatever. So I'm having a hard time remembering which specific parade this was that I'm about to talk about, but I'm pretty sure.
Coal Miners Day?
Yeah. Coal Miners Day. That's Melch, you know, towns in Iowa.
Is Melcher Dallas a coal mining town?
Yeah.
I did not know there were coal mines in Iowa.
But towns in Iowa all have summer festivals of some one kind of another. Yeah, Watermelon Days is that other thing. And Melcher, it's Coal Miners Day. Coal mining was a huge industry. Where I
grew up, it was Kaiser Days because we were called Kaiser. And then years later, it became Iris Days. Because the Iris Festival happened. We got Iris Gardens there and stuff like
that. No, Iowa had a huge coal industry for a very long time.
Mm.
Until something about the quality of the coal and the expense of getting it and transporting it, it made the market. A lot of towns in Iowa that are ghost towns or that are really small dying towns, they started as coal mining towns. Mm-hmm. Melcher is one of those towns. So they have Coal Miners Day there. But anyway, they also had homecoming. The school had homecoming and at the home. Yeah, it was homecoming. The homecoming parade, elementary school kids would march in costumes. Not necessarily the costume they were going to have a few weeks later for Halloween, just costumes. And so I've got pictures of me in every costume I had from kindergarten to sixth grade, clown costume. Mom made me a dog costume out of paper bags. She made me a robot costume out of cardboard nice. Boxes. And I mean, I won awards for these costumes. Because you know, each grade got an award for the best costume, and in 1976,
Jesus,
she
the
made
year
me,
before I was born.
In 1976, she made me like a colonial,
of course, yeah,
that I wore to school, you know, with knickers, and you know, I had to wear tights and everything underneath it, and a ruffled shirt and all that. Mom just made that stuff all the time, and. When I look at old pictures, it looks to me like my siblings, whenever they had to wear something mom made, they didn't like it very much, but I always thought it was great. And it, again, I didn't often identify or relate to any of these things. Like I didn't, yeah, it was mom's idea. Everything that was made, I was just happy to put it on and pretend I was somebody else for a while. It didn't matter what it was. And then when I was older, you know, there was when I was in college, there was a sense of what do I want to be, you know, what do I want to go out and whatever. But I didn't often
the Batman origin story,
as you know, I can't often find something that I want to act like or be like that isn't just what I already do. So that's not often a very good guide for me for costumes. And that's why, like when we worked together and I wore costumes all the time, as you recall, Uncle Sam, Santa Claus, always had something for Halloween. The very first Halloween I worked at Applied Systems, I was Darth Vader that year. And I did a costume for Halloween every single year I worked there. But most of the time I've picked costumes, it's been that the situation or circumstance sort of picks it for me. I don't think to myself, yeah, what suits me or fits me? Although the closest I've ever gotten to that kind of thing is like a wizard costume that I incidentally have never had. I've never had a costume. Like I've had costumes, like I said, Uncle Sam, Santa Claus, a death, remember? But like a wizard, like that someone would look at me and recognize, oh, that's a wizard that you're dressed
yeah,
as.
Yeah, no.
I've never done that, but I've often.
You want the wizard costume of the male wizard character from Champions of Norrhad. The starting one.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. But so.
I find it weird that we both remember it.
Interestingly, coincidentally, I should say, Abby and I have been talking about me getting a costume I can wear when we take the kids out, because last year was really the first year that Delmer could go, because he, you know, that's the first Halloween where he could walk and run around and knock on doors and stuff, and he was a dragon. And
I remember
Abby was a pirate. She's got this great pirate outfit. And I would dress up in a costume when I would take Abby's kids out, but I didn't have a costume and I haven't had one for a long time. She said, well, we should come up with one. And I thought, well, maybe I'll finally do this wizard thing. And I thought, but what would I, you know, what, how, what would, maybe that's part of the reason I've never done it, is because I don't know exactly what it would look like. And then I thought, what we came up with was like a Weird West wizard. So I find a hat, like a wide brimmed Stetson like hat, but except it someone made it to look like a Weird West type of thing, which we did find. Maybe have a raven skull motif, you know, like she ordered something like a bolo tie with a big raven skull in the middle of it that we could use. And a few other things we thought, and you know, I've already got a black duster. I could just use that. I've got other black things that I already have that I could incorporate into it.
Like Carl Urban from the movie Priest.
Well, except that's what I didn't want. I wanted.
Actually, you'll just fucking look like Harry Dresden, except the version on the covers of the book, because you'll have a hat.
Actually, when I was talking to Abby about it, I said, well, let's look at this picture of Harry Dresden. It's kind of like that, but I want, you know, accents to make it, when people more see Western. It, they'll immediately think Western, right? Like the hat, something about the hat is definitely more akin to a Stetson, you know, the raven skull motif and things like that. So, and I just felt like, yeah, I that not only do I think that'd be a cool costume, but it'd probably be the first costume I've ever put together or worn that I could even remotely say is a little bit reflective of my personality, interest, or whatever, what have you.
I do think of you as something of a Weird West wizard.
But no, I like the theatricality of it. I like that, you know, you can have fun being and acting like whatever this character is. And if it resonates with you somehow, that's cool. But for me, that's not important. It's just, ooh, a costume I get to wear, and I get to maybe, you know, pretend I'm somebody else or something else, or make up a little story.
I think I'm figuring out what my deal is with this, because I have done a lot of costumes in theatrical situations. Mm. So when I was in high school theater, it was still a thing where this was long enough ago, we didn't even say the parents. It was the mom specifically had to commit to seamstressing your costumes, or at least parts of your costumes. And sometimes, depending on how things were working, they did that and the school kept the costumes for later years and things. I don't know if it was because of my size or what, but some of the things my mom made, I got to keep. And one in particular, when we did I don't remember the name. It's a famous Cole Porter musical, I think. And I was playing this rich British guy on vacation, basically. And I had to have knickerbockers.
Mm.
And all that was basically, imagine board shorts made out of corduroy with elastic gathers at the bottom. And I found that this translated pretty well into any costume that needed like breeches or something.
Mm.
And then in college, I got into the SCA, the Society for Creative Anachronism.
Yep.
And a friend of mine made a very large tunic that I wore, and then I wore the knickers with it, and it was a real good, like, sort of medieval peasant vibe. Mm. And I wore that in a lot of situations, sometimes in LARPs and things like that. And I did realize a couple times I went to gaming and sci-fi conventions in cosplay. One time I wore a yukata, which is a kind of Japanese bathrobe sort of thing. And I carried this practice rubber kendo sword I had. So it was a vaguely sort of, now that I realize it, colonizing South Asian plantation owner. But at the time, I thought it was like a cool martial arts measure. And then I translated that into early 2020. We actually went to GamaCon, and I dressed as, I think, a wizard. In that I wore my bathrobe. At a certain point, I realized I could just dress comfortably in public in ways that I wouldn't normally dress and say it was a costume. So I just wore my bathrobe, which was a big hooded one. And I was like, yeah, I'm a wizard, whatever.
I've never really had an interest to dress as a character. That's my brother, Scott, does all the time. I mean, Lee Majors is a $6 million man. Han Solo, Indiana Jones, Star-Lord. I mean, and he goes all out. His costumes are so good. So he really likes to do that, but I don't really like dressing as different characters, the real characters from fiction, I mean.
My brother-in-law and my niece go every year to Portland's Comic-Con, which is a much smaller one, but it's still, you know, a pretty big convention. And they've been doing some matching cosplay, and in fact, last time they had really good Witcher and Ciri costumes that looked really cool. So they're very into that.
But Jazz asked if you had is there a favorite costume that you've had yourself or?
Not especially. Again, I have ones that I would love. I would crush an Ursula costume. Like, I would nail that so much. I guess I am built to be Hagrid, but no, not really.
I can't say I have a favorite either. But I mean, in terms of relation to everyday dress, you know, to me, they're completely different. I mean, I dress for practicality and comfort. And so it's not necessarily going to look like anything, jeans, a t-shirt, whatever. Now, I do like to have things on my hat or my shirt or whatever that that are fun to wear, but that's hardly a costume, right? That's just an advertisement.
I don't believe you're a buttercow.
That's just an advertisement for things I like, really. And I don't now, even necessarily need
if
that.
If you had a yellow tunic with a picture of a butter cow on it and then a mask that looked like a butter cow.
Looked like a butter cow. Now we're talking. When I was going to go to residency and I didn't have anything to wear, and they wanted you to dress like you would in sessions and stuff, like, you know, professionally or whatever. I had no idea what that would be. And so I found myself sort of putting together what, for lack of a better term, is it's like a uniform, right? Like, well, this is what I think I would look like, or I imagine. And it wasn't anything that I wear every day or have ever worn every day, but it fit what I pictured my professional attire would be in a profession that I've never been in before. Right. So, in a sense, that's a costume, I suppose.
I mean, we're getting a little philosophical here, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, speaking to the question she asked about identity and how it relates to what you wear every day. I mean, I think there are situations where it feels like the cultural demand is that you don't just wear whatever you feel like wearing that day, that you wear something that fits the cultural context that you're going into. Like if you go to a funeral or a wedding or anything else. And when that happens, you've got a lot of choices you can make about, well, what colors are these going to be? What style, how formal or informal, or how can I make it comfortable, but still passes I don't know, business or business casual or whatever the cultural demand is. And I think you can get pretty, I think your own personal taste is going to obviously show up there, because you have to make these choices about, you know, how much you're going to spend even. I mean, all these choices that you absolutely have to make if you're going to conform to the cultural demands in the first place. And those choices are definitely going to be influenced just by personal taste and you know, the whim of your personal identity and everything else. And I think you will end up with something that, if it's not completely conforming to what someone else wants you to wear, right? If someone, I mean, someone can tell you, no, this is what you're going to wear, and then you don't have any choice at all. Yeah. But if you have any choice at all, what you're going to end up with is obviously going to be something that I would think would inevitably reflect a little bit of your own personal taste and identity, I would think. I think what I chose to wear to residency expresses a lot about me personally, even though they're not outfits that I ever wore before.
There's a very clean starched dress shirt with a picture of a butter cone. I mean, this might be obvious for the dude who won't wear pants anymore, but as I have gotten older, and I think this is at least somewhat conscious on my part, I have really tried to minimize the space between what I would really like to be wearing and how I would like to express myself and what I actually wear. And I am in a place of tremendous privilege in that front. I understand that for a variety of reasons, but it's something that I work on. It's if I'm like, well, I should wear something more like this, but I want to wear something more like that. I try more and more to wear something more like that. I mean, the whole buying the slacks for the funeral, like I said, if I had had a black caftan, I don't give a shit. I would have shown up in it. And as is, that was a huge bowing to social pressure for me, the likes of which I don't normally do anymore. But that's the thing. So when you ask me, do you have a favorite costume or whatever? What I think about is cool outfits I've put together in the past that, in some cases, were like to LARP or something like that, but it's not a known character or a set costume or something. Just like, no, I grabbed some stuff that I thought would look cool and I did that. So
yeah, the stuff that I wear to residency and then I'll probably wear in session if I can manage that, if that's not some kind of a problem, I really like. You know, it's nothing I would call, you know, comfortable or something I'm going to just throw on or whatever. But in terms of being in a professional environment and feeling like I should put in some effort, you know, to show that I care about where I'm at and I'm showing some deference, I guess, by dressing up a little bit.
I'm very comfortable. You'd go full Patch Adams, just like lab coat and clown nose.
I'm very comfortable in it. I like putting it on even. So, you know, it's, but nobody else was dressed like I was at residency. I'm the only one who was wearing a jacket. You know, but I liked it. Again, it's not any way I'd ever dressed before, but it seemed comfortable. It seemed appropriate.
Dark blazer, coconut bra, and tutu is not something most people could pull off, but on you it looks very professional.
Well, thank you. I'm glad. See, you're the first person to say. I was kind of wondering.
I think everybody else is a little awed.
But okay. Well, we all know if I shave my legs, they can look pretty good with hair.
Do we all know that.
That was something I joked about when I was in the hospital.
Oh, my legs definitely look good when I shave them. Although at this point, especially my lower legs, they just don't got no hair no more.
I don't think mine
either. Probably because of it. Socks are a leading cause of that.
Oh,
I think. But in my case, I experimented a lot with hair removal in college. And at one point I did actually wax my lower legs.
Hmm.
And to my mind, that the hair just sort of never really came back. I don't know. I mean, that may just be my own weird memory of it, but if you like our legs, go to the blog, magicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us. Also, write in your costume thing. I know for a fact a lot of listeners to our podcast have done costuming things, so come tell us about it. Also, what's your favorite Mike Flanagan thing? Tell us in the comments. Smash that like button. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, man.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.